Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to the Two Nollies podcast. I am your host, Timmy Long, and this is my co-host, James Leonard.
Hi, everybody.
And tonight, our guest is a lady by the name of Nora Trench Bowles, and she is a person who stammers. It's over to you, Nora. How are you?
How are you, lads? Listen,
you're a dub.
I am. Thanks so much for having me. I'm a Northside dub, so I feel like I can relate on some level to the two Norries.
Yeah.
But I'm together with a Cork man. Now he is from the south side, but he is great. So please don't hold that against him.
We just have a bit of crack with the Southsiders here, but you know what? Everybody's the same. It's just, you know,
banter.
It's just a bit of banter at the end of the day.
Sure. We have the exact same in Dublin with the Northsiders and the Southsiders, so I know it well.
What age are you?
I'm 34. And the other big news is that Brian and I are expecting a baba in January.
Congratulations.
So that's the big news of the moment.
So you have an north sider and a south sider. where's the kid come in?
I know.
A perfect blend of both.
There you go. Well done.
And I suppose one of the things I'm thinking of, especially at this stage, because apparently the baba can hear outside the womb from about 5 months on. So I'm really conscious of trying to stammer as openly as I can. I'm a person who stammers, like you said, Timmy, and I've come a long way, I think, in becoming more open and compassionate, and even proud with that as an integral part of who I am. But you know, it still takes work. It's been a huge source of pain and shame and fear. And I should warn you now that I'd be surprised if there weren't a few tears now before the end of it. I'm a crier at the best of times.
It's okay, there's plenty of tissues there.
Yeah.
I see them here.
Yeah. A lot of guests cry.
Do they? Good.
We talk about tough stuff for people, but there's people at home that maybe don't have the power to speak, and you represent those people. So will you actually define what a stammer is?
That's a great question, and in a way it's kind of undefinable. I think stammering is a really unique experience for each person who stammers. It's a unique experience for me day to day. I mean, it depends on the situation, it depends on my mood. It depends on how tired or not I feel. It really depends on so many things. But I suppose what it can be defined as is disfluency or a difference in speech. But I heard this really great quote once. I think I should have checked, but I think it's from an American speech and language therapist called Chris Constantino. And he said, stammering is what we do when we're trying not to stammer. So there is the actual disfluency of it. And I think we can talk a bit about that, because we're all disfluent in some way. But there's the built up behaviors and fears and avoidances that many people who stammer, myself included, do on the daily. And I suppose that's what I've been trying to unpick, especially in recent years.
Do you know, say for example, you've had a stammer since birth?
Since as long as I can remember, yeah.
So how was it for you growing up as a child that had a stammer?
Yeah, like, that's an interesting one, because I think in ways I probably got off lightly. I, you know, come from a really loving family. I went to quite progressive school, so I think that probably helped in terms of I was never, you know, beaten up in the playground because I'm a person who stammers. But it was more the implicit feeling. It was more the things I didn't do. It was the plays I didn't put myself forward for. It was the debating team I didn't join because I didn't think I could. I didn't think it was possible to be a person who stammers and be in those kind of public speaking environments. And I think that that's something that we really, as a society, need to examine, because, like, what's so wrong with a bit of stammering? Like, what is our obsession with fluency? And what do we kind of associate with fluency without even knowing that we do? And I think in some ways there's an association between intelligence and fluency and confidence and fluency and knowing your stuff and fluency. And those are some of the assumptions that I know people have had about me, that I'm unsure and unconfident, which are simply not true. It's just the way I speak. You know?
It doesn't matter if you're nervous or anxious or forgetful, you'll stammer regardless.
Now, there are certain situations where the stakes are higher. And I suppose what I would want to say there is, like, stammer more or less rather than stammer worse or better. But in saying that, like, there are times when I'm at home with my partner, Brian, and I'm stammering away in the most kind of safe, secluded situation possible. Yeah. There are times when I'm delivering a big presentation and
it's for what?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It really, really depends. And I think I was thinking about this today. I think one of the things that is maybe a shared experience among people who stammer is how even like really kind of small moments of the day can feel very high stakes. So I was remembering when I used to wait for the bus on Westmoreland Street in town in Dublin, and I, like, my heart would be pounding out of my chest. This is when I was a teenager. I'd just be like dreading for that bus to come around the corner, because I know I'd have to say to the bus driver where I was going, and I knew I was going to stammer because I'm a person who stammers. And I would, like, the stress in those moments, when I think of them now, I feel very compassionate for myself to have had such levels of stress in such kind of moments, which for many people are just...
You couldn't help it, like.
I couldn't help it, yeah,
Do you know what? I'm imagining the anxiety that you must have felt, and, you know, the embarrassment when you're that age and you don't have that self-compassion. Must have affected you socially as well, you know, with boys and stuff like that.
Like, oh God, like, there was so much shame. Like, there was so much shame. And the shame is the bit that, by kind of being more open and accepting of it, I'm trying to kind of chip away at. It's funny, because I think this is a good thing too. Like, I think I don't fit the mold of perhaps the typical person who stammers that others might think of. I'm actually very social mm-hmm. and confident, depending on the day. But like, that's not to say that there's not loads going on inside me, and there's not loads of mental gymnastics going on. But certainly, like in school time, I think how it affected me really was I was just so uncomfortable in my own skin, and I was like, imagine constantly, like every time you open your mouth, trying to be someone you're not. Because every time I opened my mouth, I was trying to, as the phrase goes, pass as fluent. When I'm not, I'm a person who stammers.
And there's a whole load of acceptance around that person then as well, isn't there?
Totally.
And like, when you're looking at everybody else, I'm presuming, and they're all fluent, you know, and they all speak. I suppose it's just not, it's normal for a human being just wanting to be everybody else, but you're not.
Mm.
You know, you're different and you're unique in your own beautiful way.
Mm.
And when you're a child, you don't understand that form of acceptance that you have now.
Mm.
You know, when you're a teenager, the last thing you want to do is stand out.
Yeah.
But to even hear you say that, like, unique and beautiful, if you'd said that to me when I was 16, I would have turned away. Like, I just, like, that was too far. Like, I couldn't even comprehend that. I was just hiding and fearing, and it was only really in my 20s when I did a course of group speech and language therapy called Dublin Adult Stuttering DAS, which was run by Dr. Jonathan Linklater, who is development manager in the Irish Stammering Association, which hopefully we'll get a chance to speak about.
Mm-hmm.
That was a life-changing experience, because there I was talking openly. First of all, talking openly about having a stammer. Secondly, stammering openly, because I think there are two slightly different things. And like within that group of people. And I remember I had to leave the internship I was doing early of a Monday to go to the meetings, and I told my boss and my colleagues what I was leaving to go to, and that was like a watershed moment. Mm. So I'd never said those words to anyone outside of my family before.
That's amazing. That was a real turning point, really.
Big time.
You know,
big time.
Like, going on later on in life, did you get any form of counselling to be able to maybe release some of that shame that you carried because of your stammer? As you said earlier, you started, and you'll be chipping away, I'll tell you straight up, you'll be chipping at that for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
But
I shouldn't laugh because it's absolutely
because you're
true.
Laughing because you understand. And I do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
When I can relate to somebody, and it's not when I can relate to somebody, it's like I laugh as I say, I go because it's like, Jesus Christ, I laugh because there's another person that understands the way I work, and might be a different thing, but it's the same thing. So did you get any counselling to be able to understand the in-depth stuff a little bit more?
That's a really good question. In a way, the speech and language therapy has elements of that, and I would have done a bit of speech and language therapy as a teenager too. And I've gone to therapy as a person with lots of stuff going on. And actually, it's funny, when my final session with my therapist, she was retiring, she said, do you remember what you said to me on the first day that we met? She said that I had said, like, don't go there about the stammering stuff, like, I don't want to go there. And then of course we did as the sessions went on, but I was really like quite close off to it at the beginning. I think what has really helped me unpick stuff though is getting involved in the Irish Stammering Association and connecting with fellow people who stammer and the stammering community, that has been a really freeing experience.
We were speaking to a lady there earlier on, and she was talking about another organisation she's involved in. She was widowed, and she has a group where she speaks to other people that are widowed, men and women, and it's the exact same thing. You're around people that you share the same energy and space with, and you know exactly how they feel, you know. And there's a great sense of belonging when you're around people. It's like A and NA for me and James. We're around people that have been down this exact same route as us: addiction, hospitals, prisons, poor mental health, trauma, and we can understand each other so much. And I can understand. That's why we understand the importance of being involved in these groups and be able to share openly and have people that understand you.
Can I ask you about the mechanics of the stammer? Like, is it something to do with the brain, or is it something to do with the mouth or the tongue? Or?
Again, great question that I wish I had a straightforward answer for you to. But I don't think that we know, like, you know, there... You know, some say that it's genetic, although there's no one in my family that I who I know of who was or is a person who stammers. There's certainly a physical side to it, but there's also like a very strong environmental and emotional side to it. So coming back to that phrase, stammering is what we do when we're trying not to stammer. There's something about the reactions that I think we got as children who stammered that embedded themselves in us and led to a struggle not to stammer. But that's not the full story, because there is definite there has to be a, like, if it was that easy, I think we would have figured it out by now.
A mix of genes, environment, like a lot of things, you know.
Exactly.
There's no straightforward answers, you know.
Which is, and also which is maybe part of why I think there's a lot of misunderstanding out there about stammering. Because it's not easy to explain. It's not, and it being a communication thing, it's even harder to explain when you're a person who stammers. It's like it's funny. I think maybe that's one of the differences. Say you're comparing perhaps someone with a physical disability who's in a wheelchair. There's a kind of a visual prompt you get that you can kind of not prepare yourself. I'm trying to think of the right words, but when it comes to interacting with them, whereas I'm in someone's face by the time they realize that I speak differently to them. So I see the reaction, like I see it right in front of me, the confusion and the disdain and the like. It's you can really feel it because it happens so close or something.
And it's spontaneous as well.
It's spontaneous,
you know. It's just something that happens out of the blue, you know. And that's such a great point to make there, you know.
I wonder what percentage of people would have it. Is it common or rare?
So they say 1% of the population. So 1 in 100. So what's that in Ireland? 50,000. 5.5 million.
50,000 is it?
No, it's about
1% to 5 million.
1 million is 10. 5 million people in the country.
50,000 is 1%.
50,000.
But do stammers come upon people as well when something traumatic happens in their lives? That's something I've a question about. Like, does that actually happen? Say, for example, somebody has maybe a traumatic experience as a child, or they get a dog frightens them, and can someone pick up a stammer over something like that as well? And would that be something that the stammering society has people in as well?
There are no doubt stories like that. By far, the higher number of stories I know about through the stammering community are people who have been people who stammer for as long as they remember. But that's not to take away. And there are cases where someone, you know, has an awful situation like a stroke, and perhaps their speech changes. But with all of the people I've met through the stammering community, the most common story by far is, for as long as I can remember, since I was a child, kind of thing.
And what is the actual process for somebody that has a person with a stammer to actually get better in being more, well, I don't mean getting better, but being more kind of fluent to a degree that they're able to speak and people can understand them?
So
is it a big process?
What I might do there is challenge you on your assumption of, or challenge you there on what the goal is. Okay. So like there, the goal is to basically stammer less become more fluent.
Yeah.
And stammering pride is something which it's a movement which is kind of gaining momentum recently. Okay. And that kind of puts forward a new idea of stammering, a new way that we could look at stammering, that it's not necessarily a problem or something that needs to be fixed or something that needs to be hidden. Maybe it's just a different way of speaking that has value in itself and can be respected in itself. Now, that's not to say, like, it can be very debilitating and it can be quite an isolating place to be. I've heard some really harrowing stories of people who stammer who don't leave the house or who only go to the same one shop because the person there knows them. You know, like it can be a very
take over your whole life.
Yeah.
It can limit
your experiences.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because they haven't got the same acceptance around it that you do.
And listen, it's like It's not easy. Yeah. Like, I face those negative reactions every day, and some days I feel better equipped to to challenge them or to take them on than I do other days. But I do think we need to look at what the goal is. Do we want, because there is no cure to stammering. Yeah. There is no cure. If in that case the goal is to stammer less and to become more fluent, do we actually give people who stammer an impossible task?
Challenge,
that actually makes it worse and worse and worse.
What you need to do, my idea is what we need to do is to build people back up because of their experiences with other people where they've been judged around stammering or the shame and things like that. It's about building them back up and getting them to a place where they say, this is who I am. You know, and I'm happy to be the way I am. You know, even I'm a person with a stammer and what's wrong with that? Nothing.
Do you know what you remind me of there when you're talking? Do you know, in the media a lot at the moment is the transgender thing. And do you know, if people want to be called a certain tone, just leave them off if that's what they want.
Yeah.
And
you know,
what's the big deal?
And if somebody has a stammer, that's okay too. And like, we don't all have to fit this one ideal of the perfect person, you know. That's very
easy. Nobody is, anyway.
That's very easily into that box. And then we're all judged off this ideal, you know. And just to have an inclusive society where we're all just humans of diverse and full of positives and flaws and all, and it's no problem. Like,
it's actually a good thing to be different today, to be honest, because we're all so.
And who's the ideal, you know, then?
What is, there's not, and it's like to be so unique in your own way, and just to be happy about who we are. I guess it, like it, all of us, even me, I'm who I am today. I'm happy about who I am, you know. Even though some people might point out a lot of my flaws, but others won't. Others will see the positives. It's I think we're at a time where it's okay to be okay in your own skin. And you don't have to be a certain way, walk a certain way, or have all this amount of cash in the bank. It's, you're fine where you are. You know, I think we're really, really moving closer and closer to that place of time where it's okay to be exactly who you are and where you are, you know?
Because I do think that there's two sides to that. I think that there's the work that we can do ourselves, but there's also the work that society needs to do to be more accepting of difference. And I love your optimism and I love your positivity and I wish I was maybe more there with you.
It took a lot of work, Nora. Trust me, I didn't always feel like this, let me tell you that. No.
But I think that as a society we have some way to go to kind of to truly accept difference. And I think, you know, podcasts like this are exactly the way to, you know, share stories and try to change the narrative. Stammering Pride came from what's called the social model of disability. And so the social model of disability isn't new. It was around since the 70s. But basically, where the medical model of disability puts the problem on the person with the disability. So the impairment that they have causes the problem and causes the barriers. Whereas the social model of disability says it's actually the oppressive society that doesn't accept or accommodate that person's disabilities or differences. That's what creates the barriers. And I think we have a lot of systemic stuff that we need to chip away at.
Even like coming on the podcast is great now, but like in mainstream media you don't get to hear many people with stammers, you know.
Oh my goodness,
do you know who has a stammer?
Tell me.
Joe Biden.
You do too, won't he?
Yeah, and that's what I heard on Cork Radio when we were, if this actually came up, we did a small piece for our Patreon channel, you know.
Yeah.
And it came up about lisps and Tourette's and just speech differences, and then around that time I heard Joe Biden, that he was planning to come to Ireland, and the Stammering Society was trying to reach out to him that he might come to meet them. And then, because I often see Joe Biden when he's obviously, you know, big, the highest profile in the world, that office, and sometimes he's, when he's speaking, you can see he's very composed, he's taking his time. So, like, for him to be able to hold that high office and have this, to have a stammer, but, you know, in a speech and language setting, like, what is it you actually do? Like, do they help you with, let you take it over.
Well, I think it very much depends on the speech and language therapist. And luckily, I've had very positive experiences, or I mean, when I did it in my teens and then again in my 20s. I know some speech and language therapy would focus on what's called fluency shaping. So there we go back again to the goal is actually less stammering, more fluency. And what's the cost?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Of fluency, there is the question I'd ask of that. But the speech and language therapy that I did gave me a few tools to use, one of which totally blew my mind when I heard it first, which was at this DAS speech and language therapy I did when I was 20. It's called voluntary stammering. So the idea is there is that you, as the person who stammers, you disclose your stammer by stammering freely, stammering openly, you know, ideally towards the beginning of an interaction, of a presentation. And that blew my mind because I had spent my whole life trying not to stammer. And here I was being told that if you stammer more, it might help. And it really did, because what it does for me is, like, the fear for me is the fear of being caught out, being caught out as not being a fluent person. Yeah. That's the fear. And isn't that kind of mad to think that, like, even though, like, I've always been a person who stammers, but I still carry that fear of being caught out. And what voluntary stammering does is it allows me to announce, to disclose, which then kind of drops the fear of being caught out, because I've already done it myself. And so there again, it's that kind of complicated, nuanced thing of, is the goal less stammering or actually more comfort? Mm-hmm. And does more comfort actually come from more stammering?
That's all. It's just, and you know what was going through my head when you were saying that? I was saying, I wonder when somebody actually says, you know what, I have a stammer and listen, this is who I am. Does it actually get easier again? And does it, the stammer actually not get too bad because they're not as anxious because they have that form of complete acceptance around it? And does it just, you know, they stammer, but it gets slower and slower. That's what that was going through my mind.
Does anxiety make it worse?
I'm
going back to the better or worse language there. But do you stammer more when you're anxious?
I mean, the short answer is yes. It really depends. I had a big meeting today on Zoom, and I had like one point to make, and I just, the fear was building up in me, and I'm like really disappointed by how I did, and I'm disappointed because I didn't stammer more, because had I stammered more, I actually would have felt more comfortable. But I'm trying to hide it. I mean, even
you don't
then
feel good about that then.
It's funny, I used to beat myself up for stammering too much. Now I beat myself up for stammering too little. Like, there's no bloody winning.
Oh, jeez. Find in between.
I know.
But I can imagine like trying to deny who you are, and then like you're getting, and then you'll get exposed because you can only keep that up for so long, and then you feel shame that you don't have the acceptance of who you are. I think that's kind of where you're coming from with it.
And that all happens in a like 10 second period, because it's in that moment of speech when, like I say, you're actually faced with people's reactions. And so all of that is happening kind of instantaneously. It can be exhausting. But it's funny about the Joe Biden thing, and here I am bringing in, like, you know, you would think, wouldn't it be brilliant that a person who stammers is the US president?
Yeah.
And yes, in lots of ways it is. But in other ways, what I feel uncomfortable about is Joe Biden very much represents this kind of overcoming narrative.
Yeah, I get you.
So I was a boy who stammered, and I read Seamus Heaney in the Mirror for hours, night after night, to get rid of my stammer, which sounds awful, by the way. Yeah. No, I love Seamus Heaney. Yeah. Sorry, nothing about Heaney. Yeah. But, and what I love to hear is people stammering.
And being proud of it.
Well, whether they're proud of it or not, like, that's a, but as opposed to saying I am a person who stammers, the actual stammering is what I think we actually need to desensitize. I have to desensitize myself to stammering speech. Yeah. I hear myself sometimes and I'm, you know, a bit shocked by it, because like you were saying about the representation, we don't hear it on the TV, we don't hear it on the radio, and we don't actually hear it from Joe Biden very much. He actually speaks very fluently.
You wouldn't know only if he said it.
I know, and that's uncomfortable for me.
Because then, like, there's probably a whole host of people that stammer that will always stammer. And he's like representing maybe a tiny proportion of people that has stammered, but no, they don't. And if that's the ideal, then it kind of leaves a lot of people kind of feeling like, oh, there's something wrong with me because I can't be like Joe Biden, you know? When what Joe should be maybe is stammer freely, and then let other people say, there's nothing wrong with it.
Now that would flip the switch if the US president.
Like.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know who really stammers? And it was the most important thing to me growing up to hear him on the radio. Do you remember Pronchus de Rossum?
Yeah, that's right.
Like, he was the only person I heard on the radio and on TV speaking with a stammer. Like, that he was all I had to hear and relate to. And when there's such little representation that he is still the person who I think of.
It probably stops people from going for public office and high profile positions, you know, the fear
and being judged on it,
you know.
I like going to people's doors, you know, trying to get votes, and every time you go to the door, like, that can be very off-putting if you don't have the acceptance around it, you know? Would you ever run for office?
Do you know what?
I think you'd be great at it.
Oh, God. I do sometimes wonder. I think that's a potential lost because of... I wonder if I didn't stammer, but it's so... It's so useless to think like that, because that'll never be.
Yeah.
But I do wonder if I would have gone into politics had I felt more comfortable.
Are you saying now that you wouldn't because of...
I even sitting here in front of you now saying that I'm a proud person who stammers, I facilitate this Irish Stammering Association Stammering Pride discussion group, even then, my stomach is in knots at the thought of that. Like, I did some door knocking for one of the recent referendums, and I found it, I struggled. I found it hard.
Yeah. You know, the way to change that is by keep doing it. and just gets easier and easier.
I know.
I had some fear over, over what we're doing here at the beginning. The fear. Like James would tell you, like I barely get words out because I forget to breathe. Oh no, you can't shut me up.
But I think maybe the difference is no matter what Nora does, it's always going to be there. And you're going to meet that every time you knock on a door. You're going to be reminded. You're going to they're going to be taken aback because they mightn't have had an interaction like that for a long time. But I think like you're a very likable person.
Yeah,
you're a very likable character. Like you're lovely to be around.
Aww,
I think people would like you.
Yeah,
I think people would fall for you.
That's so sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's so sweet. God, God, I don't know if I have the energy. Do you know
you won't have the time soon.
Perfect excuse.
Well, Helen Mack and T there is firing out the kids at the moment.
Good honour. What a trailblazer. Yeah, oh, my goodness.
Young woman in such a high office and doing a really good job as well.
Mm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Changing the way it is for women in politics.
Yeah. She's only your own age, I'd say.
I used to work in European affairs when she was Minister for European Affairs. So I did a bit of work with her. And she was great. Yeah,
you
yeah.
Might get her for the podcast for us, would you?
Listen, I probably have absolutely no sway, but I'll put in a word for you. Absolutely.
But listen, she's obviously the Minister for Justice, and a lot of stuff we do is around justice and prisons and courts and probation. So it'd be very relevant.
Mm.
So look, we might talk to you after about that.
Let's circle back.
Did you like do a bit of politics, or you're into that stuff?
I am. Yeah. I mean, I studied politics in college. I worked for the EU in Brussels. I dabbled a bit in student politics, but to become a student rep. You have to stand in front of your class and ask for votes. And I remember I signed up to do it, and I just couldn't do it on the day. It was the fear did I do it? My God, have I blocked it from my memory? But so I do, in terms of potential, and that's something like research will show that people who stammer are disproportionately either unemployed or underemployed.
Yeah.
And there is something about like reaching someone's potential and the barriers that an oppressive ableist society can create to stop that. And it's funny you should say that, because that for me is the one would that have happened but sure, listen, I'm doing loads of things that I just thought it wasn't possible to do this kind of thing.
Mm. And you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job. Are you working at the moment?
I am. I work in higher education policy, and I know you have both have amazing education stories.
Education changed our lives.
Yeah,
massively.
Yeah,
it not just gave us an education, but it also gave us the vocabulary that we use today.
Yeah.
You know, because before that I didn't have that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to have a conversation with you because I never learned any of those words. I wouldn't have known them. I knew the words of the street and from where we came from, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, and we are educated.
But education gives you, as Timmy said, the vocabulary, but also the understanding, the critical thinking skills as well, to be able to look at situations and make up your own mind, which I think is lacking in today's society. Mm. There's lots of media, but there's not much critical engagement with it, and a lot of disinformation and stuff like that. But what do you do in higher education?
So I'm focusing on lifelong learning policy. So I'm working with the universities and with government as to how we can make university education better available to people throughout their lives. Like it doesn't it we can't have it that it's, you know, forefronted from age 18 to 22 and then see ya.
Yeah.
We are going to need to dip back in to higher education throughout our careers.
Yeah.
But the system isn't set up currently for that.
I'm doing something that you might be interested in at the moment. So yeah. Last year, and it's happening again now at the end of the month, but we brought an addiction studies course from UCC, Adult Continuing Education, between them, HSE, and myself, into Cork Prison.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm teaching prisoners just the basics around addiction studies and, you know, addiction, the services available, the different methods to recover. But it's something, it's for the prisoners, it might be their first time ever having education outside of maybe a terrible schooling experience.
Yeah.
And getting them to understand that adult education is a lot different. And it can be fun. And, you know, it can be a very positive experience. The tutors aren't like teachers, or the lecturers can be friendly. And, you know, so like, we'd be very passionate about, you know, what you're doing there. So well done. And if we could ever collaborate, you know, down the line.
Absolutely. And ACE does absolutely brilliant work and deserves to be promoted near and far.
Adults Continuing Education.
That's where you're doing the mindfulness masters.
Is that
as well?
ACE?
Yeah.
ACE. Okay. Yes, Adult Continuing Education in UCC.
Yeah.
Is that throughout the country then, or is it?
So each university would have. It would that's look for, this differently.
Is
just,
this is for anybody listening. No, yeah. Would like to go on to do any?
Like, absolutely all of the universities have lifelong learning. They don't all necessarily have centres that are kind of called like that. But
they have an access office.
Oh, without a doubt. And they do Trojan work. And in the organisation I work for, we would work closely with them across higher education. And there's something to be said too about kind of the access and the disability offices in higher education institutions, in terms of when I was at college, I didn't know that I could go to them. Well, I hadn't really accepted myself as a person who's stammer, so that's the first step, really. But I didn't know that I could have gone to the disability office and gotten support, and I really just kind of struggled through as best. Listen, I had a great time, but I could have done with a bit of kind of formal support. But it's so important, that disclosure bit. So like, the disability offices, they can't provide the supports until you've gone to them to disclose.
You can't help somebody if they don't know that you need the help in the first place.
Exactly. But then it's just funny, kind of like on that kind of acceptance thing, like it takes the time it takes, and I just wish that I had kind of gotten there a little bit earlier to have helped myself in college days. But
but even for myself and Timmy, like, the acceptance that we were people in addiction, that we can't drink and use drugs in a responsible manner, that takes a long time to actually accept. You know what? I actually can't do that no more. I'm gonna have to accept that alcohol and drugs out the window for me. He can drink over there and go to work, no problem. I can't. And you have to accept that. Yeah. But then if you're happy with who you are today, you can't go back and change that, because it's all after making you who you are today. Do you know what I mean? So does that, like if we got that acceptance when we were 20, where would we be now? Do you know what I mean? Probably have our houses and, you know, probably have more money and all that. But then again, who we are today is good people, and we're happy with who we are. So would you change the past experiences? That kind of juxtaposition, like, isn't it?
I know you've said that before on the podcast, and I have to say I really admire you for it. Because you know, you've been through a lot to get where you are. And I was thinking about it in my own case, and like, again, even though I'm all about stammering pride, if I could have just gotten rid of it, you know, like, that would be. But it's that thing of there is no cure. Like,
but you know what it has given you?
Go on.
It has made you a powerful woman.
Oh,
today. has made you a strong human being. Adaptable, you know, somebody that can really look at life and accept what you have. And that's what it's given me.
Mm.
If you were to turn around to me in the morning and say, Timmy, what would you change about your life?
Mm.
From the age of the moment you were born up, every single period of my life represented something going forward. And I believe every piece of it had to happen to be able to push me onto the next level of where I am today.
Mm.
And I was listening to both of you talking about acceptance there, and that like I remember early on in recovery, I had a sponsor in the prison, and he was saying to me, like, you're just going to have to accept the past, like, you'll have to accept it. And I keep saying to myself, I accept, meant nothing.
Mm.
But one day something happened to me. Instead of telling myself, accept it, I just stood still in the spot I was standing in, put my hands up against the wall, and just felt what was going on in my body.
Mm.
And internally, I accepted what was going on for me at that time in my life.
Mm.
I didn't voice it in my head. I felt it. And I just stood there and I watched the voice. And I just... And that was the aha moment in my life.
Mm.
That I now knew that I could accept any situation that went on in my life at any time with what I just had experienced at that moment. It wasn't the voice by telling myself or affirming it. It was me standing still, looking around at nature and just being mindful of where I am at that moment and saying, this is how I'm feeling at the moment. This is what's going on in my life at the moment.
Mm.
I can't change it, and this is it. Mm. And that was my understanding.
Powerful.
It was powerful at the time. It was one of the biggest moments of my life.
Mm.
Well, some days are easier than others, then, like, aren't they? Like, yeah. One day, like, you're an advocate and you're speaking for, you know, and then on the next day, like, oh, you know, it's a bit of a why me type of thing, you know what I mean? But it's depending on the mood and the situation and stuff like that. And but
it depends on, you have to remember to do it too.
Mm.
You have to say, right, I have to really look at where I am. You have to remember that. Cause sometimes we can get caught up in today's world, which is very fast paced, and it can be a bit tough to pull yourself back from that.
There's something about the fast pacedness too, like in terms of the time pressure of our world when it comes to speaking too. And I definitely see it on Zoom meetings, like the amount of time that people are willing to wait for you to kind of start to get your words out is diminishing. It feels like it was short before, it's even shorter now.
Yeah.
So there's something about, like, just, you know, just be patient, but it was, you made me think there of something called stammering gain, which again is one of these ideas that if you had said this to me when I was 16, I would have thought you were mad.
Yeah.
But it's kind of thinking about what are the positives, what have I gained from being a person who stammers, and what does society gain from stammering? And I do think, like, you know, there are certain attributes that I have that I can really thank being a person who stammers for. You know, I think I'm observant, because I've been reading reactions for my entire life.
Yeah.
I think I'm a good listener, and I think that there's more to being a good listener than just letting people finish their sentences, even though that's a really important thing. I think there's something about, I think you lads have it too, like, actually facilititating people feeling comfortable to speak.
Yeah.
And I think I'm a bit of a, what was I going to say? I'm a risk taker in terms of, like, every time I open my mouth, I'm taking a risk.
Mm.
And particularly when, you know, doing things like this or high stakes things.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be a risk taker.
You get nowhere in life.
The risk takers are the only one that go forward.
Yeah.
If you don't take risks, you will stand in the one spot for the rest of your life.
Uh-huh.
Risks are bringing
safe out in your comfort zone.
And you have to take risks to move on to the next level.
Yeah.
He takes them, I take them, and you obviously take
them
because we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Every step that we've took has been a risk in some way, because like, it was a risk for us to start this at the beginning.
You never know how you're going to be received.
No,
yeah,
you don't.
It's going to be judgment, the shame, or you know, it's going to be negative comments, it's going to be a lot of hate or trolls. Or, and we get a little bit of that, but the positivity is way more. Do you know what I mean? So, but then when you step out of your comfort zone and you do take a risk, and then somebody then gives you a comment to say, you said this on the podcast and I could relate with that, and it really helped me, you know, like what you probably will get as well after this. Then you say, no, that was well worth putting myself out of my comfort zone there, you know. But you know, if people wanted to learn more about stammering, or if they have a stammer and they wanted support, where can they go?
Great question.
My third great question out today.
and
he's getting the chocolate bar after class, isn't you?
All of your great questions, Kimmy. Come on. Oh,
I give them to James beforehand.
So you mentioned that I'm involved in the Irish Stammering Association. So we're a national charity. We work to provide information and to support people who stammer. So we're a place to contact. We also run things like support groups. We run employment support, which help people perhaps prepare for interviews, or if they're looking to get promoted. The employment support also works with employers in terms of like raising their awareness and consciousness about how to create friendly, welcoming workplaces for people who stammer. And actually, it's International Stammering Awareness Day in October, and we always have a series of events. And I suppose what I would do is like really encourage people to get in touch, because like I said, it can be a very isolating place to be. Like I had only ever met fellow people who stammer in speech and language therapy. I'd never met them in the wild, and it can sometimes feel like, and because you know, you never hear stammered speech on TV, you never hear stammered speech on the radio, or very rarely. There are times where you're just like, am I alone at sea here? But there is an active and welcoming community, so I would really encourage people to get in touch, and perhaps parents of children who stammer. I know we get a lot of contact from parents who are understandably anxious and confused, and the ISA, Irish Stammering Association website, can help with a bit of information. And please do get in touch. We're a very small charity, but I think we punch above our weight in terms of, you know, who we support and the difference we make.
Yeah, and we're only delighted to give you a platform here.
Brilliant. 100%. Brilliant.
Definitely. And you came recommended by a lot of people as well. They said we should get you on, because we've been asked many times to have somebody on, with a stammer on.
Yeah.
And like somebody mentioned you one day, and that's when I contacted you. And I says, listen, we try our best to hit every area in society where there's somebody struggling, so we can bring somebody on like yourself to teach them and to talk to them and tell them that it's okay to be the way you are.
When we started out the podcast, it was for people in addiction.
Yeah. But
we soon learned that there's a whole lot of people out there struggling. We all feel the same pain. And this is just another area where people might be feeling a bit of pain at home, insecurity or isolation. So it's great to kind of shine light on it. And maybe people at home now, they might, you know, reach out and start the steps to acceptance. But it's been lovely speaking with you.
Listen, thanks so much for having me.
Best of luck with the baby.
Hey. I forgot there for a second. I was like, oh yeah. It's been so nice being on. Thanks so much for having me, and really well done with all you've achieved with the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
We'll see everybody next week. God bless.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.